Welcome to the Clinician Researcher Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Alumna, and it's an absolute pleasure to be talking with you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, I am talking about taking the lead. And the title of this episode is When in Doubt, Take the Lead. When in Doubt, Take the Lead. I wonder if you remember when you were like younger and you may have been the boss of people. So, or maybe you weren't the boss, but if you went into medicine, to some extent, you showed leadership. But what happens over time, especially as we get into spaces where there are people like us who are assertive, who take the lead, you realize that you find yourself sometimes going into the corner and allowing other people who are eminently more qualified to lead. And I want to say that it absolutely makes sense. And I'll share a story that happened for me recently. I was looking for an expert who could help me build a conceptual model because I'd never built one before. I was building a model and it was really important. I'm still building the model, but it was really important because I realized that the conceptual model would help us lay the foundation for future research and we could address different aspects of barriers to early diagnosis in the rare disorder called TTP. If we could just lay it out clearly and not just lay it out like we're making it up, but use the evidence to help us lay it out. So I'm looking for the expert and I finally reach out to somebody who I know has made a conceptual model before because she leads a center grant and this center grant talks about their conceptual model. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, who's the person who helped you create your conceptual model? And she said, oh yeah, that was something we created because we were submitting a grant and we needed to be able to define the foundation upon which the center would fund awards or the center would fund grants. And she said, I created it. I looked in the literature. I didn't even do a comprehensive review. And I shared it with our study team and they agreed. And that's how it came to be. So it was part of the proposal. The proposal was funded. It became a part of their center. And when she shared that with me, it really helped me because I thought, okay, she wasn't the expert. She needed a model and she created one. And she didn't even go through the rigorous process that we were outlining for our own model. And this is not to denigrate her model, but just to say that here I was saying, okay, let's do this and let's do this literature review. No, let's turn it into a scoping review and let's make this conceptual model. And she said, yeah, I didn't do near as much of a comprehensive review as you're planning to do, but I did review the literature and this is what I came up with. And it helped me realize, and it's funny, this is a realization I feel like I have every so often, that a lot of people are just making it up as they go along and not in a bad way. It's just, hey, this is what I need right now. Is there something like it? And it's like, oh, there's nothing like it. Okay, well, I'm just going to create it for myself. And then you create it for yourself and you find out that what other people want it. Other people need it. Other people have been looking for something that you've created. And if you didn't create it, they wouldn't have it. They didn't realize they didn't have it until you created it. And that's why this episode comes to you today about helping you think about taking the lead. When in doubt, when you're looking around and you're like, well, who's the leader here? Step up and just take the lead. Okay, so I'm talking about taking the lead in five specific areas. Number one, and especially because on this platform, I talk to clinicians who are building research programs, take the lead in defining your research. Take the lead in defining your research. I recognize that when we first get started in research, we are usually helping out on projects. Like somebody allowed you to participate in a study they already were doing, or they allowed you to write a manuscript on a study that they've already completed data collection. They just don't have anyone to write it up and you're able to do it and it's great. And you get a publication or you get two publications and all of a sudden you have runaway success in an area that, you know, was interesting, but it's not what you want to stake your life on. And it's okay. It's the way it works. Early on in our research careers, we're just learning the skills and learning the skill doesn't require us to love what we do. It just requires it to be interesting enough for us to learn the skills. And so when you finally become at least competent at these skills, then you can look around and say, well, what do I now want to apply my newfound skills to? Now that I feel like I have a little bit more of the skill set under my belt, what do I want to apply it to? And it's, you know, sometimes you look around and you're like, well, who's going to tell me? Who's going to tell me what to do? And it's okay to get to a point where you say to yourself, I want to define my plan. I want to define my future. I want to decide what I do. And it may be different from what you've done before. It may be different from what your mentor has done. It may not exactly fit into the space that you fit for a long time. And it's okay. It's okay. Because you're the one who's building your niche. You're the one who's building your life. You're building your career. And although we're sometimes gunning for that big reward, we're gunning for the grant, we're gunning for the funding, it really is the journey that's the gift at the end. And I know it sounds kind of flaky, like, okay, you didn't get the grant, so now you're celebrating the journey? No, it's that the journey matters. And if you're going to enjoy the journey, you want to go on a journey you actually care about. A journey that actually nourishes you and encourages you. So define your research plan. Don't be afraid to do it because other people can't define it for you. I mean, they have great ideas. They can give you feedback about your plan. But if you say, define a plan for me, you're likely to get their plan for themselves. And it probably will not fit you like your plan for yourself will fit you. So when in doubt, take the lead. Define your own research plan. Number two, take the lead. Create the environment you wish to see. Many times we spend so much time saying, and this person did this, and this person made this environment horrible, and if my environment wasn't so toxic, and I'm not here to belittle the possibility of toxic environments. Oh, I know they exist. Oh, I know how toxic they can be. But before you leave, and here's the thing, as long as you're still there, the environment has to serve you. As long as you're still there, even if it's 2 more weeks, it's 3 more months, just in 7 months, I'll be done. Why not create an environment that serves you for 7 months? Why tolerate toxicity? Why not create an environment? If you think about it, you know, when you add oil and soap and in water and the oil comes together and forms micelles, so that the external part that's towards the water is hydrophilic and the parts that's away from the water is hydrophobic. You can do that too. It's like, okay, well, how do I create an ecosystem within an ecosystem that supports me? Don't say no, just 3 more months and I'll quit because you're miserable. And somehow time slows down when you are tolerating an environment that you can't stand. And the question is, how can I change this environment for the better? How can I create the environment I want? And you might say, oh, yeah, you have no idea. I'm in this person's lab. They're the ones who control the environment. And I just want to say, you control your own environment. And don't say, I don't control it. I have no choice. Say, how can I? How can I create the environment I wish to see? What does that look like? What does that look like? I mean, the power really is in your hand, because as long as it's up to someone else, as long as they have to change so that your life can be better, it will always depend on them and you will always be powerless because you've handed over your power to someone else. You are choosing. You always have choices. And so if you want an environment that nourishes you, that helps you be the best, you create that environment. You create that environment. And then you invite other people into that space so that you become a leader in the space that you created. So that's number three. Number two, create the environment you wish to see. Number three is be the change you need. Okay. So you can create the environment. Sometimes you look and you're like, oh my goodness, this really sucks. Why are things this way? And to be honest, if you really counted the number of problems around you, they are too numerous to count. If you wanted to, you could spend all day and all night every day of the week complaining, and you would still not be done complaining about the environment. And the question is, which of these issues that you're complaining about matters enough that you're going to change to see it succeed? You're going to change to see it done. And here's the key about change. It's always easier to ask someone else to change. It feels easier, but the result is always poor. Like, it's just not a good result, because most people, if they do not resist what you're trying to tell them, will pretend and then, you know, subtly undermine your efforts to make them do what they don't want to do. And so the biggest strategy you have to make change anywhere is to first change yourself, first change your approach to the environment, first change your attitude. And all of a sudden you'll find that what used to be a problem, it may still be a problem, but it'll be a different problem. And in fact, it wouldn't even be a problem. It'll be a challenge, all because you've done the work to change yourself so that you can better serve that need in your new, enlightened, advanced stage. And here's the thing I love about that beautiful, enlightened, advanced stage, is that it's not permanent. Before you know it, you're going to need to transform, and then you're going to need to transform, and then you're going to need to transform some more. Transformation is beautiful. So instead of waiting for other people to change, be the change you wish to see. You change you so that you can best serve the area that you really want to serve the most. Number four, take the lead in opening doors that are closed. You know, sometimes people say, oh, no, this table is full. Oh, we're no longer letting people in. Oh, we're no longer available. And we stand at the door and we bang, 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 bang. And we're like, no, let me in. I'm qualified. And they're like, oh, no, only if you have a top hat. And then you travel the furthest regions of the world. You find the most beautiful top hat. And by the time you come back, they'll say, oh, yeah, we stopped doing the top hat. And now we require a monocle. Instead of knocking on doors where people don't want to open them, what if you created your own doors, or you go find other doors to open? Wherever it is that you are, and people act as if they're not happy when you walk in, I want you to believe them. And then I want you to decide to go somewhere where the door is easily open for you. So someone says the door is closed here, say thank you. And then go look for the exact same door elsewhere, because you're going to find it. And you become a master door opener, because you're no longer depending on other people to have the keys or to open the door for you. You do it yourself. You're more than capable. You absolutely should. And finally, number five, take the lead in exiting spaces that don't serve you. You know, relationships and experiences are for a season. There is no law that says a research collaboration has to continue forever. There's no law that says that a mentor-mentee relationship needs to continue forever. It's nice when it evolves and your mentor becomes your friend. It's so cool, but it doesn't always happen, and it's okay. Some people are there for a season, and some people are like shining stars. They just burn out and fizzle out, and it's okay, because change is happening. You're changing, they're changing. And sometimes it's important to embrace the future that's ahead of you by exiting spaces that no longer serve you. And it doesn't mean these spaces are ugly or they're bad or they are toxic, though they could be all those things. It's just saying, recognizing that there is a point you get to where it's time to go. And what you want to do is you want to go before you're asked to leave. But especially if it's a space where they don't honor you as a person or respect you, or they leave you out of things, it's okay to exit. Not that you're quitting, but that you go to a new location where you build your own space and then bring your own people in to create a new family. All right, so I talked about five things that you should take the lead in. Number one, take the lead in defining a research path. Number two, take the lead in creating the environment you wish to see. Number three, be the change you are looking for. Number four, open the doors that are closed. And number five, exit the spaces that don't serve you. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you today. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Clinician Researcher podcast, and I invite you to invite a friend to be part of this. Definitely share the episode so that their lives can be transformed as they take the lead, even when they're in doubt. All right, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I look forward to seeing you again next time on the Clinician Researcher podcast. Have a great day.